Hello, I'm Elena Del Valle, and this is the HispanicNPR.com podcast. My guest today is Clement Feng, who is Vice President of Product Management at Briggs & Stratton Energy Solutions. We will discuss backup power options. Clement is an experienced executive with expertise in residential and commercial backup power, clean energy, and home improvement products. For more than two decades, he has helped educate homeowners and business owners to pursue energy independence and improve resilience in managing power outages. Welcome.
Hi, Elena. It's great to be here.
Before we start, if you would share with us a conflict of interest statement in terms of our conversation today, what would you tell our listeners? Do you have a conflict of interest?
Let's see. I represent Briggs & Stratton Energy Solutions, and we are a manufacturer of engines and power equipment, as well as backup power generators and battery storage systems. So any conflicts I may have is because I am representing our company.
I took a look earlier today in preparation for our call, and I saw that there are about 500,000 people in the Midwest who, because of tornadoes, I think it was, are without power. And there were, like, I think you were saying earlier, 2.7 million in Houston after Hurricane Beryl hit. What do you know about that?
Yes, that's right. Hurricane Beryl was a major event. And unfortunately, the track of that hurricane went right into the Houston metro area where a lot of people live. And at its peak, right after the storm passed, about 2.7 million people were without power in the Houston area. And then more recently, with the storms that we saw in the Midwest, some tornadoes, I think it may have been a derecho event, which is a high wind event that affects a large area. There were, at its peak, yes, about 500,000 people without power throughout the Midwest, including the Chicago area and Indiana area. And these are just examples, you know, from the last couple of weeks. But severe weather and thunderstorms, things like hurricanes, have been causing more power outages with a longer duration than in the past.
So we're looking at, for the Houston area, 2.7 right after the storm hit. And now it looks like there's about 100,000 people who are still without power.
Something like that. The Houston area has recovered since the hurricane went through, but there's still some people that haven't had their electricity restored.
And those are just the ones that we know of because of the number of people that are being affected. I've also heard anecdotally of people, for example, who had to get generators because they had power outages for, I don't know the details, but it sounded like no good reason to me.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons for power outages. Severe weather is the main one, and it's because high wind events can knock down tree limbs, and they take down power lines, you know, and so that can cause an entire neighborhood or an entire city to be without power. But then there's other more routine things that you don't think about, you know, maintenance. It could be an auto accident, you know, a car hitting a transformer somewhere. Those things happen all the time, and they don't get the headlines because you're not affecting a lot of people, but it is happening more frequently. And I think one of the things that makes these power outages so much more noticeable these days is just the way that we live our lives. We're more dependent on electricity than ever before. Things like the internet, you know, your router won't work at home without electricity coming in. And then, you know, not to mention the inconvenience of your refrigerator or your stove, microwave oven, none of those work without electricity. So the way we live our lives makes it a lot more noticeable whenever we are without power.
And now also we have much of that technology and electric, fill in the blank, electric vehicles, electric mowers, electric, et cetera, and AI that are pulling energy from the grid.
Yes, you're touching on a larger macro trend that's going to make electricity that much more critical. And it's the what we call the electrification of our economy and of our society. Electric vehicles is probably, you know, one of the most visible examples. The trend is pretty clear. The adoption of electric vehicles is going up, you know, in fits and starts, but more and more people are driving electric cars than ever before. And then you also have factors like AI that are causing the companies that support the internet to build these big, big data centers that are extremely energy intensive. And so all of this is adding up to significantly higher loads on the electrical grid. So the electric companies for many years had been seeing stable or even slightly declining electricity demand because we've gotten more efficient. You know, when we get appliances and the switch to LED light bulbs, you know, for a while that caused power consumption to kind of decline. But in recent years, due to, you know, EVs and data centers and other data hungry or electricity hungry devices being put on the grid, we're seeing higher electricity demand now than in the past, and it is projected to go up even more dramatically in the coming years.
We also are dealing with an aging infrastructure. This must be playing a role, right?
Yeah, when you think about it, you know, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, and he kind of helped the country establish the electrical grid that we know today. And that's the system that we think of where, you know, you have these big power plants located somewhere, usually, you know, in a rural area, and they produce electricity, and then you run these transmission lines across the country into the cities and into the homes and the buildings where people live and work. Well, that infrastructure, in many cases, is, you know, 100 years old and has been maintained and updated over time, but the population has grown. And where people live has gotten more spread out. And so, yes, the electrical infrastructure and the grid maintenance requirements have been pretty significant for many years. And it's a continuing challenge to maintain and modernize that electrical grid.
What is the best, and I imagine there isn't a single best, but what options, let's look at it that way, what options do regular everyday people have when it comes to these power outages, whether they're isolated, as we were saying earlier, because of small incidents or large, as we're seeing post-hurricane in Houston and in the Midwest? What options are available to people to bridge the gap of having electricity and it being restored after one of these incidents?
So, in many instances, the homeowner will ride out the power outage. But when a power outage lasts more than a few hours, now it gets to be a nuisance and people start looking for solutions. The first thing that often comes to mind is I'll go get a generator. And so they'll run down to the hardware store or to the home improvement center and then buy a generator that can be turned on to make electricity. That is a portable generator. And many people are familiar with them because you can go camping with them or you see them on a construction work site and you have portable power. But a portable generator isn't the most convenient thing to have around in riding out an extended power outage. And it's because they'll only run for a few hours before you have to refuel them. And then you have to go get gasoline. So if it's a widespread power outage, the gas station may be without power. There could be long lines. You always see those images after a hurricane of people waiting in line at a gas station to get gas for their car or for their portable generators. And that's the issue with a portable generator, but it can produce electricity. You have to run a lot of extension cords and you have to operate them very safely because they produce carbon monoxide. They're an engine. And so they have to be run outdoors and kept at a distance away from living quarters. A more convenient way to have backup power is to prepare ahead. So if you live in an area that's prone to power outages, or let's say if you lived in the Houston area, you know, expecting a hurricane is a very rational thing. It's going to happen sooner or later. Maybe not every year, but certainly every few years, there will be some major storm that goes through and causes a power outage. Many people that are living in these areas will invest in a home standby generator, and those work similarly to a portable generator, except they're permanently connected to the home, and they turn on automatically. That's the best part. They're very convenient products. So in the event of a power outage, the generator will sense that the electricity is gone coming into the house, and then it transfers the house over. Instead of getting power from the utility company, the generator turns itself on and begins powering the home with electricity that it generates. And all of this happens automatically and almost instantaneously. Within 10 to 20 seconds, the generator will turn on and the home power is restored, and the homeowner can go on managing and living his life just as though nothing had happened. So they're wonderful devices that have been around for some time, and they're widely available through installers and through home improvement stores as well. You can get a home standby generator installed.
So those are the main two options for backup power in these cases. Is that right?
Yes. And, you know, but what's interesting is there's a new technology that's emerging right now, and that's batteries. I think everyone can relate to, you know, needing to charge your cell phone overnight or any kind of portable device like a portable speaker. They have built-in batteries, and you charge them up, and they'll run for quite a few hours charged. Well, now battery technology has advanced to a point where you can put in a stack of batteries with enough capacity to power the whole home. So imagine, you know, your whole home is like a giant cell phone. You charge it up, you charge up that battery, and you can run the house on it. Now, in the case of power outage management, you might have a stack of batteries that sits in your basement or in your garage, and it stays fully charged. But when there's a power outage, you can cut over the house to run on the batteries rather than getting the electricity from the utility company. And the charge will last, it could last for, you know, several hours to even a few days if it's a large enough bank of batteries before they need to be recharged. So in that way, these home battery systems function a lot like a home standby generator. They turn on automatically and they have enough power to keep the whole home energized for several hours or even several days.
Let's talk a little bit about each one of those, starting with the portable generator. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said is that the challenge if your power is out for more than a little bit is that you have to refill them with gasoline every few hours.
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge from the little that I know is that they're very noisy. Is that still
Yes.
true?
That's very true. You can hear a portable generator from far away. I mean, they're pretty loud devices. It's kind of like having a lawnmower running. They use similar engines, in fact. That's one of the products that Briggs & Stratton is most well known for. We make the small engines that go into these portable generators and into lawnmowers. And so they are quite loud, and they also produce exhaust. And so that's another concern too. The standby generators use similar engines, but because they're permanently installed, you make sure that they exhaust away from the house, number one. And then number two, you don't have to run any extension cords. I mean, that's another issue with a portable generator. Once you get it running, you still have to plug in the extension cords and then plug in any of the appliances that you want powered by that generator. With a home standby generator, the power is fed right into the home's electrical distribution panel, the same panel that takes the electricity from the utility company and distributes it throughout your house. And so in that way, a home standby generator is also safer because you don't have to run any extension cords anywhere. You don't have to plug anything in. So things like your air conditioner, your sump pump, and your refrigerator, where, you know, the cord may be behind and not very convenient to access, you don't have to worry about any of that because the home standby generator is powering the entire electrical system in the house.
Now, the other issue that, in addition to the exhaust that you have mentioned, is an important thing to be aware of, that you keep the portable generator away so that you're not breathing in that carbon monoxide. The other issue for the portable generators is that you don't need them very often. If you're lucky, you only need them when a storm comes by. So it could be that in some locations, say, I would imagine many of the islands are hit by something every year. It certainly seems like it, watching the news. And in other places, it might be an infrequent occurrence, maybe once every 5 years or once every 10 years, that you're really in a position where the power goes out. And so there's a certain maintenance that you have to be aware of with the portable generators, because they tend to get stuck. The fuel lines get stuck. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah, you bring up a very good point. A portable generator needs to be pulled out of storage and then manually turned on. And you're right. If you haven't used that generator for, you know, a couple of years, any gasoline that might be in the generator may have gone stale, and then you have to clean it out and clean out the carburetor in order to get that generator working again. And that's the last thing you want to do in the middle of a power outage. You just basically want to turn it on and get power restored to your home, or to a few devices anyway. So that is a concern with a portable generator. Now, folks that own one of these, maybe they use it for camping, they probably know you've got to do maintenance on that portable generator and then keep gasoline on hand, and to make sure it's going to be ready to go when you need it. But that is another nice convenience about a home standby generator. These generators turn themselves on once every week. They do a self-test to make sure they're running properly. And so whenever there is a power outage, you have a lot more confidence that that generator will be ready to turn on and provide power to your house. And of course, it operates automatically, so the homeowner doesn't even need to be home for the home standby generator to work. With a portable generator, of course, it's not going to turn itself on, and it's not going to plug itself in for you. So in many instances, people that own like a vacation home or a cabin somewhere that they use only during the summers, those people will often install a home standby generator because they're not often at that house. And so that home standby generator gives them the assurance, the confidence that their home will be protected from a power outage even when they're not there.
Are the portable generators able to provide enough energy to replace a central unit? I'm assuming it's air conditioning, but there are cold places that also need generators. So whether it's a heater or an air conditioner, are they generating enough power to take over a central system?
Yeah, so a portable generator is typically going to provide only a small amount of power. Small meaning, to put it in perspective, like a really common portable generator that you would use for going camping makes about 2,000 watts. So if you can imagine 2,000 watts, you know, a hairdryer probably consuming 1,500 watts. So if you use a hairdryer, you're using most of the electricity that that small camping generator can make. Now, the larger ones that are typically used in emergency situations or in power outages that you might buy at the home improvement store, those could make 5,000, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 watts of power. So you can power a little bit more stuff. But your central air conditioner in your house, that will be unlikely. And it's because you can't even plug in the air conditioner or the blower on your furnace into a portable generator. They're not, you know, they don't come with a plug like that. They have to be hardwired into the house. And so in that case, the home standby generator provides power to these hardwired appliances like air conditioning and furnaces. And in addition, a home standby generator produces a lot more power than a portable generator. So these portable generators, like I had just mentioned, they could be producing 7,000 or 8,000 watts. There are bigger ones, but 7 or 8 is typical. A home standby generator, the smallest one that Briggs & Stratton manufactures, produces 13,000 watts, and one of our most popular units produces 26,000 watts. Now, with a 26,000-watt home standby generator, you can pretty much power everything in the house that you would want. Your TV, your kitchen appliances, your air conditioning system, your internet, even your swimming pool heater. If you wanted to go swimming in the middle of a power outage, it would be working perfectly fine with a home standby generator backing it up.
What are the price ranges? So for the portable generators, you said somewhere between $2,000 for a camping size one to $8,000 for the largest. What is the price range for those?
Let's see. A very high quality camping style portable generator that's quiet, those could still run you at least $1,000, maybe a little bit more. For the larger portable generators that aren't so quiet, that are good for emergency use, they could be had for probably around $1,000 as well, depending on the brand and the size. Some will be a little bit less, and some will be a little bit more if you're getting a larger one. A home standby generator costs quite a bit more than that. They start around $3,000 or so for the equipment, but then you have to worry about the installation as well. So you have to have a licensed electrician or a generator dealer install it for you. But typically a home standby generator with installation might run about $10,000, maybe a little bit more, depending on the size of the generator and the location. Sometimes there's permits that need to be pulled, or other complications with the installation, like requiring a natural gas line to be upgraded or installation of a propane gas tank. In those cases, then installation costs can be a little bit more.
What kind of shelf life, for lack of a better term, are we looking at for both the standby and the portable generators? How long do they last?
With proper maintenance, both of these types of products will last for many years. We warranty our home standby generators for 7 years. But the reality is they will last much longer than that if they're maintained. And maintenance is relatively simple. It's kind of like a car a little bit. You need to do an oil change and a filter change every once in a while. Once every year or two is usually sufficient. And then the battery that's inside the generator has to be replaced every few years as well. So also like a car engine. So the maintenance is relatively simple, but if it's properly maintained, yes, they will last at least the 7 years that our standard warranty provides. And most homeowners will step up and purchase the extended 10-year warranty as well. So you can be pretty confident that that generator will last at least 10 years. And we have experience seeing our generators in the field operating for 20 years or even longer.
And the portable generators?
That one I'm not so sure. I think a portable generator, they typically only come with like a 1-year warranty. And the how long they'll last really depends on how often you use them. You know, if you're going camping and you're going every weekend throughout the summer, you're probably going to wear out that generator more quickly than if you only used it once in a while.
One of the objections that I've heard from people who have opted for or who have considered the standby generators is the requirements, as you were saying earlier, to install, having to have a tank for the the gas or the propane. Would you tell us a little bit more about why that's such a challenge?
Sure. So a standby generator typically uses either natural gas or propane. So it's a gaseous fuel. And so if a home has natural gas access, most homes in America do, you know, for their stoves and for their furnaces, then you already have a natural gas line coming into the house. And now you just need to connect it to your generator. If the home does not have natural gas access, that's when a propane tank may come in handy. And then many homes that don't have access to natural gas already have a propane tank. Farms and people living in rural areas often do have propane tanks. So that may not be an issue. But if it is, you'd have to install a propane tank. Portable generators don't use gaseous fuel typically. They use gasoline or in some cases diesel. But that is a consideration. So one solution, and that's the battery solution, provides a significant convenience when compared to either of these generators. And that's because a battery doesn't require fuel at all. They just need to be recharged. And so the charging is typically coming from the electric utility company. You know, it's just another device in your house that takes a charge and uses electricity. And so you can charge that battery up to full, and then it'll turn on when you need it. But of course, another alternative that you're seeing more and more homes adopt, and not just homes, but commercial buildings, and that's solar energy. Solar energy, you know, is taking power from the sun. It's like free energy, and then converting it or inverting it into electricity that can be stored in the batteries. So when that happens, then the fuel source is the sun. And so that's a major attraction for folks that either don't want to use a generator or can't use because they don't have a place to locate a generator. Batteries are typically smaller and can be installed indoors, unlike a generator, which always has to be installed outdoors.
You were saying a minute ago that most people in the U.S. have access to gas in their homes. Is that also true in hurricane-prone areas, places like the Gulf of Mexico, Texas, the entire eastern seaboard, Florida? Is that also the case in those areas?
Yes. According to statistics tracked by the government, about 70% of all homes in the U.S. have access to natural gas. And that does include many areas in the Gulf. So like throughout Texas and along the Gulf Coast like that, certainly along the Atlantic coast, you'll see pretty good natural gas infrastructure. And so most homes, you know, there are built with natural gas piped into the house. And so access to fuel is not an issue. But there are some places like in Florida where the natural gas infrastructure may not be so good. And so then in those cases, you often do see propane tanks on the property.
I also read a while back that there were many people with complaints that the company they had hired, they hired a third party to install a standby generator, as you were saying, that just was supposed to take over when the power went out, but that it wasn't working, and that the company they had bought it from was dead in the water. I'm not really sure what happened, but they were not responsive. Is that a common occurrence? Was that just an unusual situation?
I wouldn't say it's a common occurrence, but the best way to protect yourself from that is to do a little bit of research on the contractor that you're selecting to do the installation. Briggs & Stratton and other companies that make generators often have what we call a dealer locator on our websites. And so you can just put in your zip code and a radius, and we will provide you with a list of authorized dealers and installers in your area. And in those cases, the dealer and installer has been trained by the company. We're certifying that they know how to install our equipment and they know how to maintain them. And so the chances of having a very high quality installer are much better when you use one of our authorized dealers for the job. But yes, I mean, these are electricians, and we hear about, you know, contractors just, you know, moving or going out of business, and that can happen. But even if you run into that issue with some of our equipment, the warranty comes from the manufacturer. And so even your maintenance needs don't have to come from the same installer that put in the equipment in the first place.
Let's go back to the batteries. It sounds like this might be a promising new alternative. And you were saying earlier that you could use solar energy to charge the batteries, or that you could charge them directly from your electric outlet. Did I understand correctly?
Yes, that's right. So the batteries, you're right, can be recharged from either the electric company, just like any other product in the house, or it can take energy from a solar energy system and then recharge the batteries off of that.
Are these the same type of batteries that have been involved in these epic fires that we see in the news that can't be put out and that restart, the ones where they've been telling people not to park their vehicles inside the garage, not to park their electric appliances, etc.?
Yeah, so battery chemistry, there's a lot of different battery chemistries available. In the old days, well, it's really not that long ago, but perhaps 10 years ago, a real common battery chemistry would be NiCad, nickel cadmium batteries. And those didn't hold charge very long. They wore out quickly. And so the industry went to lithium ion batteries. And some of the unfortunate fire incidents can come from these older lithium ion technologies, which when they catch fire, you know, can be difficult to put out with water. You have to use special chemistry, firefighting chemistries to put them out. That doesn't happen very often, but when it does, of course, it creates spectacular fires that make the headlines. The newest battery chemistries and those that are used in our batteries use what we call lithium ferrophosphate, or LFP chemistry. And LFP chemistry is inherently much, much safer than the older lithium ion chemistries. They are less likely to catch fire, and when they do, they don't burn anywhere near as hot. And so you see in most home batteries, most modern home battery systems, they do use the LFP chemistry. And the automakers for EVs are beginning to adopt LFP as well. LFP tends to be a little bit heavier than lithium ion. So for a car, you know, weight is a big problem. But in home applications, and in our instances, we've supplied these same batteries to the U.S. military for quite a few years. They've been using LFP chemistry. We've always used LFP chemistry because it's an inherently safer and more reliable chemistry.
How do the batteries compare with the portable generator and the standby generator in terms of the wattage that they produce or that they can store?
Batteries and generators, while they both produce electricity, kind of work differently. With a generator, the amount of power output is how you usually rate them. With a battery, they can produce or put out as much power as a generator. So supplying a home's entire circuit, you know, 10,000 watts at a time, a typical home is only using 5,500 watts at any point in time. That usually isn't a problem for a battery. But with a battery, the bigger issue is the more power you're consuming, the shorter the charge will last. With a generator, you have almost infinite runtime as long as the generator has fuel. So it'll run forever without a problem supplying all that power. With a battery, you can provide and power as much equipment as a generator. It's just that if you turn everything on all at once, you'll drain the charge in the battery that much more quickly, and then you'll have to recharge the battery when that happens.
And when you say that much more quickly, what amount of time is that?
One of the most common systems that we will sell has about 20 kilowatt hours of stored capacity. And so we estimate that with a 20,000 watt hour battery stack like we sell, that can power a home for more than a day if the homeowner is careful about not turning everything on at once. So you would, in a power outage situation, you probably won't turn everything on. Like, you won't do a load of laundry while in the middle of a power outage. And by just minimizing what you use in the home, you can get a stack of batteries to last you for several days if you just use only the electricity that you need for your essentials.
When you say essentials, does that include heating or cooling? For example, right now in Houston, essential would include being able to cool a house because it's in the 90s.
Yeah, so a central air conditioner is often the biggest electrical load in a house. And so, yes, people that have installed battery systems in Houston have put in much larger battery systems, much larger than even the 20,000 watt systems I'm talking about. They could be, 50 or 60,000 watts and in order to run the central air conditioning. But that is a very good point. If you know that you want to back up a central air conditioner, you need to have a larger battery system installed, or you put in a generator, which won't have an issue with runtime.
If I'm understanding correctly, what you do with the batteries is that you buy the largest one you said has a capacity of 20,000, right?
We can certainly go much larger than that, but a very common size is about 20,000 watts.
So do you take several of those 20,000 watt batteries and connect them, or is there a larger battery that you purchased? How does that work?
Yeah, so that's a very good point. The system that we produce comes in these modules that provide 6.6 kilowatt hours in each module. So a three-module system is what I was referring to. That's one of our most popular configurations. That altogether has a capacity of 20,000 kilowatt hours. We can just simply add on more of these modules, up to six of these stacks. And so if you had six stacks of three, you can get all the way up to 120,000 watt hours of capacity. And so, yes, just like you said, you just simply add as many modules as you like, and they are installed quite conveniently as well, almost like stacking Lego bricks. You just put one battery on top of the other until you have a stack of three, and then you create another stack of three, or you just add one or two more on as you need, and then you increase the capacity of the system.
And what is the price point, the range from one to the six stack of three?
So with a battery system, there's a lot of other variables. You need an essential piece of equipment called an inverter that takes the battery energy and converts it into alternating current that the house can consume. So the inverter varies quite greatly depending on how big it is and how many batteries are involved and whether you have a solar energy system or not. But with a typical three stack of batteries and a common type of inverter, the system could be installed for, I would say, $10,000 to $20,000, and you'd have a battery system. But that's a pretty big range, and each home is quite unique. So the installer needs to do a proper evaluation of the house in order to give you an accurate installation total price.
$10,000 for the equipment and the installation, or is the installation separate?
The installation would be separate, and that price range can vary quite a bit.
And for something like the six stack of three, 120,000, what would be the price for the equipment, and approximately what would be the price of the installation?
Wow, that one I couldn't even guess. It's because the inverter and the other electrical equipment and the installation labor would vary so greatly depending on just the situation at the building. Sometimes people install these battery systems in a whole separate building, and then you have to run wires from the exterior building into the house, and so it can get quite complicated. But those become major projects that really a qualified installer would need to quote out.
What duration or how long do these batteries last? I don't mean necessarily at the moment in which you're using them. You've given us an idea of what that is, but from the moment that you purchase them until the batteries wane, as we know batteries usually do?
We warranty our batteries for 10 years. And so you can be pretty confident that a battery system will last at least that long. And at the end of the 10-year period, it'll still have 80% of its capacity. That's a real common benchmark for battery warranties. And so what we have experienced is that the batteries will, in fact, last much longer than 10 years. It's more like 20 years before they kind of wear out to the point where you need to replace them. So in that sense, these home batteries are designed to last much longer than what you might see, you know, let's say with your car battery or your cell phone battery. Those might last only a few years. But then they are being, you know, cycled and on and off and up and down continuously. A home battery usually doesn't see that kind of heavy usage. And so that's why they last so much longer.
It sounds like you also need to think about the setup that you want in advance. So you can't just like buy one battery and say, well, I'm going to try it out and then maybe I'll add more. I'm kind of hearing you say that you need to think through what you want, because it's also going to be important in terms of the inverter and the installation itself. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, that's right. You can't just, you know, run down to the store and buy a battery and plug it into your electrical panel. I mean, first of all, an electrician likely needs to do that for you. That's beyond the capability of most DIYers to work on their electrical panel. But yes, a installer would probably do a site survey at the home and evaluate how much power is being consumed and the usage patterns. You know, it's quite different if somebody is working from home and is running a business versus somebody that, you know, is just home in the evenings and has a pretty light load. And so they will size the system appropriately for you and provide recommendations on the type of inverters and how many batteries you might need.
What type of conditions are necessary for the battery location or storage? Can they be out in the open? Is high humidity an issue? Is very cold or very hot extremes? Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes. Our battery systems are designed, they're outdoor rated, and so they are designed to sit outside. Cold temperatures, if it gets below significantly below freezing, it could cause the battery to not recharge efficiently. So in that case, there are accessories like battery warmers that you can install in a system. So if you live in a northern climate, the installer may recommend that you do that. The other alternative, of course, is to have the batteries installed indoors. And so we often see people installing a battery inside their garage. And that's perfectly fine to do. There are regulations on where you can install the batteries, but usually the basic rule is you can't install a battery like in a living area. You wouldn't want it in your bedroom, let's say. But if it's inside the house, there often will be a mechanical closet where the home's electrical distribution panel is housed, or where you might have your furnace and air conditioner equipment. So there will be a mechanical closet somewhere, and that's often a place that people will install the battery system.
And this fire risk that we were talking about earlier, how prevalent is it with this new type of battery that you were telling us about, the LFPs?
Yes. So different municipalities have different regulations and requirements. So that is another concern and why it's so important that we have a highly trained electrical installer do the system configuration. They'll be aware of all of the local requirements and regulations that they have to comply with. But in some cases, a local authority may say that the batteries have to be installed outdoors. In other cases, they may say it can be indoors, but you have to have, you know, like some fireproof material surrounding the battery, and it needs to be away from living quarters a certain distance. And it varies quite significantly from one new municipality to another. And so really each homeowner needs to talk with their installer and get a full understanding of the requirements.
And humidity, I haven't heard you say anything. Is that not a concern at all?
That's usually not a concern. These batteries are engineered and designed to work in outdoor conditions. And so, you know, daily heating and cooling causes condensation on the outside. But well-built batteries are designed to work in those kinds of conditions. So that's usually not an issue.
What is the country or countries of manufacture for all of these options that we're talking about, the portable generators, the standby, and the batteries?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. With batteries, battery cells are typically coming from overseas. There are some domestic sources of battery cells, but not too much, although that situation is changing. The manufacturing infrastructure for batteries is improving in the U.S., but most battery cells are imported. Generators can vary. Briggs & Stratton is a U.S.-based company, and our manufacturing plants are located throughout the U.S. I'm located right in Wisconsin where our headquarters is, but our main generator factory and engine factory is located in Georgia. And so that's assembled in U.S. for sure. Some of the components may be imported. But it's a patchwork, but many generators, especially the standby ones, are assembled in the U.S. Portable generators are more often imported, but they can also be assembled in the U.S. It just depends quite a bit on the manufacturer.
And when you say imported, is this Mexico or China?
Yes, I would say both. Both are suppliers of components and engine parts. China is a big source for battery cell technology. So yes, many cells will come from China.
What application do these options, the backup power options that we're discussing, how can they translate for, I'm going to say small businesses, because I imagine that very large businesses will have a completely different and independent setup, but for people who are, say, for example, now so many people are working remotely, or for people who have small businesses. So say that you live and work in Houston and you have a small business. Now you have no power at home and possibly no power at your business. Do these backup power options, can they translate into a small business?
Yeah, very much so. If it's a smaller building, like let's say a strip mall or a restaurant, a battery system could be quite feasible. A large bank of batteries is certainly technically feasible, but likely prohibitively expensive. Utility companies may, you know, invest in large utility scale battery storage, and that is happening. But a very traditional way of providing backup power to a commercial building or to industrial buildings like factories would be these large generators, and those are industrial generators, and that technology has been around for a very long time, like 100 years long. And these are big generators. I'm sure you can picture them. You know, if you're outside of a office building or a strip mall, you might see a little fenced off area that is hiding a generator, and those are big, typically diesel fueled industrial generators, and so they provide backup power to a large building whenever there is a power outage.
Is there a rule of thumb that you might share with us that will help our listeners decide, I should get X, a battery or a portable generator and a battery, standby? How do you decide? I mean, part of that, of course, is going to have to do with your comfort and your wanting to be 100% covered. But is there a rule of thumb that helps people decide price point and option wise?
Yeah, I would say probably the most important thing to consider is what type of protection from a power outage are you most concerned with? If it's frequently like short duration power outages, but happen all the time, a battery system may be a great solution. They don't require any maintenance. They can last for several hours, you know, get you through the night, maybe even a full day. And so if that's, you know, if you're only worried about a power outage that lasts a couple hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours, batteries would be a great solution. if you're worried about a hurricane coming through and taking power out for an entire week, then a battery system may be less feasible unless you have solar. But if you don't have solar and you're strictly looking for backup power, that's where a standby generator probably makes the most sense, because that standby generator will keep running as long as it has natural gas supplied to it, which almost never gets interrupted. And a propane tank will also typically hold enough fuel to power that generator for several days. So I suppose the long story short on this one would be is if you're worried about an extended power outage, a home standby generator is most likely to be the best solution. But if it's a lot of shorter duration and frequent power outages, then a battery system may make a lot of sense.
And number-wise, one of the numbers I've heard a lot in relation to standby generators is that they start at about $50,000. Does that sound about right when you include the equipment and the installation?
Well, they certainly, larger standby generators can be that expensive, but no, most of the time a residential standby generator, the total cost with installation is much less than 50. I would say it's more on the order of $10,000 to $15,000 is common.
And you were talking about solar power and that making a difference, but I remember I had a conversation with an interview with someone who was discussing solar power issues. And one of the big obstacles was that you can't take the solar panels down if you have them on your roof or if they're in your field when there's a storm coming and there's nowhere to store that safely and then take it back out after the storm has passed. So how do you marry those two concepts with the batteries?
So solar panel systems are typically very robust. And you're right. They are not easily taken down off of a roof and then reinstalled. That's a significant project. If you can imagine, you know, a team of roofers on top of a house installing a solar panel system. And it might take them a day or two to put in all of the racking, the panels themselves, and make all the electrical connections. So you really don't want to be taking panels up and down regularly. Typically, people install it after they'll do like a roof repair, make sure the roof is nice and sound and it's going to last, you know, for 10, 20 years. And then you'll put your solar panel system on top, because that will also last you 10, 20 years or longer. And so that system is designed to be permanently installed. Now, they are pretty robust as well. They will withstand hurricane force winds. They won't rip off unless your roof collapses. Now, of course, if the storm is strong enough to destroy your roof, you have much bigger issues than lack of electricity. And so, yes, typically solar panel systems, you'll see them all over Florida, and you will see them increasingly in Texas as well. They can withstand very strong storms.
And so in connection or in combination with the batteries, I'm hearing you say that is also a very good option?
Yes, it would be. Somebody that has invested in a solar energy system, they may or may not have installed batteries initially, because battery technology was quite expensive for quite a long time. But today, they're more affordable. We do see homeowners that have solar energy systems going back and installing batteries now that batteries have become more feasible. And in those cases, they may need to upgrade their electrical system and put in an inverter that can work with batteries as well as the solar energy. But then once they do that, you're right, that homeowner could live off grid. That's what they call it, for a while, where they're completely disconnected from the utility company. And we have many customers who are, in fact, living off-grid. They're living in a remote area, in the mountains or in a rural area, and there is no utility company. And those people have solar energy systems in combination with batteries that help them. That's just how they live.
Is that the same kind of equipment or technology that they use, say, for example, in safari camps?
Yes, we will see that. We have many customers in foreign countries who, they don't have access to a utility company. They don't have electricity coming in, so they have to make their own electricity. And so in those places, yes, they will have a solar panel system recharging a bank of batteries, and the batteries allows them to get power through the night. And then the cycle just goes on every day where it recharges during the day and discharges during the night.
What's next? So we've gone from the basic generator to the standby and now the batteries. Is it going to be more efficient and more inexpensive batteries, or what do you see as the next big thing around the corner?
Yeah, it's an exciting time for electrification and power in homes. Battery technology is the current, new frontier. But there's all kinds of R&D efforts and research going on where they're looking at different chemistries and storing energy in different ways. Hydrogen has been talked about, and these solid state devices that don't use traditional battery chemistries. They're being researched right now, and a lot of this is being, pushed forward by the automakers as they work to, come up with the next generation of automobiles. So I do think that we will see a lot of exciting new technologies come on the market in the coming years.
Al, I have not heard you say the AI words.
AI is interesting. Most battery systems, including the ones we make, come with apps and software that let you monitor the system. I don't know how AI is going to affect that. It may be as simple as, talking into your phone and telling it to, turn off a device or turn on a device in order to manage your power flow. That can certainly happen. Or maybe AI makes it all automatic. Home automation and this whole world of technology is adding a lot of convenience to our lives, hopefully without too much complication.
How much software is involved in this equipment that we've been discussing?
Yeah, so batteries are relatively sophisticated. I mean, they have battery management systems, a controller that's usually there to monitor the health of the battery and the state of charge. They will interface with an app that lets the owner see right on their computer or on their phone exactly what their batteries are doing, whether they're being charged or discharged, and how much draw is on there. And then the most well-designed software they'll let you control which appliances in the house are getting power at any point in time, so that you can ration your power usage more efficiently during a power outage. So yeah, so these are sophisticated pieces of equipment with a lot of engineering and a lot of software control involved. They're typically internet connected as well, so that you can operate and monitor your system remotely, and that the system can get firmware or software updates remotely without manual intervention.
And that was my next question is, you mentioned that a lot of your customers are off the grid and working remotely, and much of the software is very hungry for updates. How do you marry those two things?
Yeah, if you're completely off grid, you're probably used to an existence where you're not connected to the internet and you're away from civilization. I suppose you can always create a hotspot, do it remotely, or you can, do it the old school way and connect something right up to your equipment and provide a software update manually like that.
And about how often would you say that the equipment requires firmware updates?
I would say minor updates might happen on a regular basis, a few times a year. Major software upgrades are unlikely. Because the equipment is all tested and fully operational before it leaves our factory. So that typically doesn't happen. But you might get occasional rev updates, just like any other software connect or enabled device. They need occasional software updates to enable new functionality, or as some of the equipment that it's talking with gets a protocol update. Maybe it's not communicating anymore. So things like that will happen. But I would say for the most part, these battery systems are pretty maintenance-free and trouble-free.
What about hacking? This is becoming so ubiquitous. I hate to ask, but how vulnerable are they to third-party hacking?
You know, we haven't experienced anything like that, but the world is always changing. I mean, the internet outages, data breaches, it's like any other device. I can't predict, but I would say that we have not really seen that in our battery systems and in our generators. We haven't had, you know, big problems caused by hackers.
Clement, thank you for joining us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right. Great to be here. And it was wonderful talking to you about this.
And to our audience, you have been listening to Clement Feng, who is Vice President of Product Management at Briggs & Stratton Energy Solutions, who discussed backup power options. To propose a guest for the show, you can email me directly at editor@HispanicMPR.com. That's editor@HispanicMPR.com.